Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Clause 2A1 of Rule 9. I seek recognition to give notice of my intent to raise a question of privilege of the House. The form of the resolution is as follows. Articles of impeachment against Donald J. Trump, President of the United States of America, and the Congress of the United States of America. Resolution: resolved that Donald J. Trump, President of the United States of America, has undermined the integrity of his office with impunity and has brought disrepute on the presidency with immunity, has betrayed his trust as president to the manifest injury of the American people, and is unfit to be president, and is impeached pursuant to Article 2, Section 4 of the Constitution of the United States of America.
The voice that you just heard is that of Liberal Democrat Representative Al Green of Texas, who on Wednesday followed through on his threats to compel an impeachment vote against President Trump, filing four articles of impeachment in the House of Representatives while delivering an incredible anti-Trump tirade on the floor of the House. The congressman's maneuver, of course, is expected to force a vote on impeachment today in the House of Representatives or tomorrow. Now, I know you're not hearing much about this probably from any other news source, but this is what happened yesterday. And Representative Green, who is from Texas, he's from the Houston area of Texas, is accusing President Trump of betraying his trust as president by embracing racism. In his listing of articles of impeachment, Representative Green referenced Adolf Hitler and made the point that Trump can be removed from office even if he didn't commit a crime. Well, really, here's what Representative Green said. The public has been led to believe that a president must commit a crime to be impeached, which is not true. If any president persisted in the lie that Hitler was right, he would be and should be impeached, not for a crime, but for betraying his trust as president, end quote. And friends, with that, I want to welcome you to Stand in the Gap today. I am Dave Kistler. I'm joined today again by Gary Dahl. And we're going to be discussing what Al Green of Texas did yesterday on the House floor, bringing these articles of impeachment. They cover actually four charges. And to help us unpack all of this, our guest today, special guest, is my twin brother, Dan Kistler. He is a teacher of history, government, economics for going on 34 years. He is a constitutional scholar, and there's no one I know of better equipped and better prepared to address these issues and why this accusation by Congressman Green does not meet constitutional muster. But we're going to get into all that in just a minute. But Dan, I want to welcome you to the program. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, it's my privilege to be with you guys, and hopefully the discussion will shed some light on what's going on in the country.
We want to shed light, not heat. And what Al Green did yesterday was more heat than light, I'll guarantee you. But here are the basic charges that have been leveled against the president in the form of these articles of impeachment, which articles of impeachment are basically accusations of wrongdoing, criminal wrongdoing on the part of a president. But here are the four things that Al Green has submitted that he is calling for an impeachment of the president. Number one, the president is accused of inciting white supremacy, sexism, bigotry, hatred, xenophobia, race baiting, and racism by demeaning, defaming, disrespecting, and disparaging women and certain minorities. Number two, the president is accused of bringing shame and dishonor to the office of the presidency by associating the majesty and dignity of the presidency with causes rooted in white supremacy, bigotry, racism, anti-Semitism, white nationalism, and neo-Nazism. Number three, the president is charged for saying 3 to 5 million people voted illegally in the 2016 presidential election And then number four, the president is accused of encouraging law enforcement officials to violate the constitutional rights of the suspects in their case. And I think what he means by that is by the president calling into question some people that were allowed to vote that should not be allowed to vote, that is, illegals voted. I think that's what is implied in that fourth accusation. Well, gentlemen, I don't even know what to say or where to begin, but Dan, I'm going to go to you first. He said, and this is what I'd like you to address, that a president does not have to commit a crime to be impeached. Address that if you would.
Well, Dave, first of all, can I say this? I want everybody to understand something here. You know, I used to be a racist. I did. You know, you remember, Dave, when I was in high school, we actually ran track and field in high school, and I was a racist then because I entered a lot of different races, and occasionally I was a fascist. Too. I was the fastest guy in the race, finished first. But, you know, I'm old now. I can't do that anymore. So you may be thinking, why are you saying that, Dave? Honestly, Al Green's comments are about as ridiculous as what I just said. It's absolutely absurd. Dave, I have the Constitution right in front of me, Article 2, Section 4 of the Constitution, and it states, can I read the section right quickly? It's only one sentence long. It says, the president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and commit conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Of course, misdemeanor is a minor crime. High crimes, of course, serious crimes like felonies. I don't know where Mr. Green's coming from to say you can be convicted of impeachment or charged in impeachment for something other than a crime. That is absolutely absurd, about as absurd, Dave, as the comment I just made at the beginning of this discussion.
So you were a racist, huh? I tried to race away from that kind of racism all of my life, Dan, but it's that's quite a scenario there, and I understand what you're saying. Dan, here's my question, and we have less than a minute left. But when we see people like Representative Green standing up there making the comparisons to Adolf Hitler and talking about racism and then bringing it to the point of filing articles of impeachment, does, and I want to be careful here, but let's just say it, does that not show the ignorance of some of the people that we have in Congress today?
Well, Gary, I think it does, but I'll tell you what else I think it does, too. It's almost like when a teacher, like we give out detentions at school for certain offenses, and there are certain offenses that students commit that they get a detention. If you give out a detention for something frivolous, you almost destroy or negate the impact that the detention is supposed to have. And whenever a person like Representative Green accuses the president of things that are so trivial, you're almost demeaning the Constitution by accusing him of these things which are not, have not risen to the impeachment level at all.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Dan Kistler, constitutional expert, teacher of history, government, economics for three decades plus. And when we come back, we're going to take up the constitutional requirement for someone to be impeached, and that is high crimes and misdemeanors, treason and bribery. What does it mean by high crimes? What does it mean by misdemeanors? What is it that the constitutional muster that must be met for a president to be impeached? All of that coming up next on Stand in the Gap.
Hi, everybody. This is Jimmy DeYoung in Jerusalem, Israel. You often hear me on Stand in the Gap today with Sam, Dave, and Gary. Guess what? We're all coming to Israel. Love to have you come and go with us. The dates are March the 7th through the 21st. That will include 10 days in Israel, 4 days in Petra, one of the most unique cities in all the world. If you need more information, the itinerary, the exact dates, also the information about cost, call this number, 423-825-6247. That's 423-825-6247. Ask for Jody. She can give you all the information as Stand in the Gap Today and Prophecy Today go host a tour to Israel. Next year in Jerusalem, we're looking forward to you being here with us.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press materials are available for grades K to 12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Hey, I'm Brant. Just read this news item about the two things that are stressing Americans out the most. Thought this was interesting. They say we're losing a record amount of sleep because of these two things. Number one, healthcare expenses. And the second thing, saving for retirement. The two biggest stressors. But what's remarkable? You can make a phone call right now and actually take action on both of these at once. Just call MediShare. MediShare members share each other's medical expenses, and it works beautifully. They've shared over $1 billion in healthcare expenses since 1993. Most members save about $500 a month compared to other healthcare plans. Imagine having a great healthcare plan and adding $500 for your retirement every month. One call, two less things to stress about, and that can help you sleep better at night. Here's the number. Call 844-45-BIBLE. That's 844-45-BIBLE. Now available in Montana. Call 844-45-BIBLE.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Stand in the Gap Today. If you're just joining us, this is Dave Kistler, Gary Dull, and our special guest, Dan Kistler, constitutional expert, teacher of history, government, economics for three decades plus. And we're talking about what took place yesterday on the U.S. House of Representatives when Representative Al Green of Texas, the Houston area of Texas, filed official articles of impeachment against the President of the United States. And again, I want to back up to something that Dan referenced at the conclusion of the last segment, and that is the constitutional statement from Article 2, Section 4 that says, and I quote, "The president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of four things: treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors." Now, some have said because the word other is in there that the high crimes and misdemeanors would have to reach or approach the level of treason or bribery because the word other is used, and other similar, in other words, or like crimes. So what is a high crime and a misdemeanor? And that's what we want to talk about in this segment. What is it that the Constitution is talking about? There are basically, friends, four views out there among constitutional experts. I want to give those views, and then, Dan, I want to come to you, and Gary and I are going to pummel you with a lot of questions about this. The first view is this, that high crimes and misdemeanors refers to crimes against the state. And a crime against the state is a crime that attacks the very core of the state's apparatus. For example, treason is definitely a crime against the state. Jaywalking is not. So a president could not be impeached for jaywalking because that does not meet, according to this one view of a constitutional expert, it does not meet the requirement of a high crime or misdemeanor. Number two, high crimes or misdemeanors refers to so-called political crimes. And by the way, political crimes is an old legal term. A crime is political when it involves misuse of a politician's official powers. So some say high crimes and misdemeanors mean that, political crimes. Number three, others say high crimes and misdemeanors refer to when the president or a vice president or whoever is being impeached offends public sensibilities. Now, that's very, very important. public sensibility. Some believe high crimes and misdemeanors refer to that. And then number four, there is a linguistic argument that is being made that treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors implies that the high crimes and misdemeanors must be equal in seriousness to treason and bribery. And that's what I alluded to earlier. Dan, these are four basic views of legal scholars, constitutional scholars, as to what our founders meant when they said high crimes and misdemeanors. Does any of that, in your estimation, as a teacher of the Constitution, does any of that meet what you believe the Constitution is talking about when it says high crimes and misdemeanors?
Well, Dave, I would lean more toward the first and last statement that you made. You know, the president, and by the way, the Constitution does not say, other than what you just read, what a high crime or a misdemeanor is. Now, you can look up in a dictionary, you know, what a high crime is. A felony would classify as a high crime. A misdemeanor is any minor crime. And the Constitution does not say, you know, in the Constitution itself, you know, they do not define what they mean by that. But I would lean more toward, and I think most, you know, constitutional people would lean more toward what you said in your first point, and then, of course, that last statement that you made. It really does need to be something related to public trust. That does not mean that the president can just commit any crime and not, you know, face consequence for it. That's not what I'm saying. But the point is this, you know, what he's being accused of by Al Green, none of those rises even to the level of a crime, period. And that's what makes these charges by Congressman Green so ridiculous. And, Dave, let me say this right quickly, and you may be planning on getting into this a little bit later on, but it is not a crime in America. Let's just say President Trump were a racist. He is not. And that's part of why I said what I said earlier to be kind of ridiculous. He is not a racist. I'm not a racist. I was just joking. But this charge against President Trump is so ridiculous that he's being accused of being racist. Even if he were, that is not a crime in America. That is not a crime to be a racist. Part of you know, spewing racism, you can say what you want to say. First Amendment protection is intended to protect statements that the rest of us don't agree with. Racism is not a crime. Now, I don't like it. I don't think it's right, but it is not a crime in this country. So
in other words, Dan, what you're saying is it's not a crime in America to be stupid. The Constitution does affect stupidity and stupid statements, though we vehemently disagree with racism. You can be stupid if you want to in America, and that's not a crime.
That's correct. And Dave, if everybody has to agree on everything, then what was the First Amendment put into the Constitution for?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if everybody has to agree, why do we even have a First Amendment? So exactly, that's what I'm saying.
Great.
So, David, you say that stupidity is a choice?
It is. It is. And it's, well, some people, maybe it's a disease, but I think it's a choice primarily.
We won't go down that road. However, I will say this, that if racism would be what you could use to bring on impeachment, there have been a lot of presidents and a lot of senators and congressmen down through the years who should have been impeached. Correct, Dan? Because, you know, some of them were racist and they were sort of proud of it. And so, you know, if you take that as one of the reasons for impeachment, then, you know, well, there's a lot more people who could have qualified. But where I want to go with this is twofold. Number one, we have David New on with us from time to time, Dan, and he is, like you, a student of the Constitution. And he said at one particular point that high crimes basically is a phrase that relates only to people in high office. In other words, according to his definition, I, Gary Dull, not holding any high office at all, could not commit a high crime. Would you agree with that?
Well, I can see where he gets that. I do. I can. And I would not have a problem with that statement at all. Not at all.
And the other thing is, when you read Article 2, Section 4, it says that there first of all has to be, well, it says, shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of. In other words, before anybody can be impeached, there has got to be a conviction of that particular crime or misdemeanor first. Is that correct? Is that the process? Well, there's got to be the conviction first, then the impeachment can proceed?
Well, that's what it looks like it's saying here, okay? And again, let me say this. Dave and I were talking about this a little bit last night, Brother Gary. When we use the word impeach, you know, I think the American public as a general rule thinks that if you've been impeached, you've been convicted. No, not at all. When impeachment is brought against the president, that does not mean he's guilty of anything.
Right.
That does not mean he is. In other words, the Senate, where the impeachment trial would occur, would actually convict him of that charge that the House brought against him. But the impeachment, the term itself just means you've been accused of something. It does not mean that you've been convicted. And again, I understand where you're going going with this, but this is the way I take Section 4 of Article 2. In other words, you cannot be removed, okay, unless you've been convicted of one of these crimes, treason, bribery, another high crime, or a misdemeanor. In other words,
yeah.
You cannot be removed. You know, just the charge, obviously, is not enough to remove you. You have to be convicted, obviously.
And actually, okay? The impeachment itself doesn't remove one from office, correct?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely
not. Yeah, Gary,
not.
That's the point I think Dan's making, and this is where there is great misunderstanding among the general public. Impeachment is the process that could lead to a conviction.
Right.
It is
Correct.
The accusation
Correct.
And then the moving toward a trial in the Senate that could result in a conviction. But the removal can only take place if conviction follows. So here again, let me read Article 2, Section 4. The President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of, and then it lists the four things that they have to be impeached on the basis of and convicted of. So impeachment is not the removal itself. It is the process that could result in removal. Is that correct, Dan?
That is correct. And Dave, you and Brother Gary, all of us know that we have had two presidents who've gone through the process of impeachment. Andrew Johnson, of course, who was the successor to Abraham Lincoln, and then, of course, Bill Clinton. And neither man was convicted. Both went through the process. In the case of Andrew Johnson, the Senate failed by one vote of convicting him. Had they gotten one more vote, he would have been kicked out. But they did not get that two-thirds majority, which is required in the Senate, so he stayed on as president. Not a very effective one, but he stayed on as president. And in the case of Bill Clinton, if I remember the totals in that, it was 55 people voted not to convict him and 45 voted to convict him. And of course, it would take 67 senators, two-thirds, to, you know, to kick a president out.
Dan, I know we're just about out of time here, but, you know, it seems to me like the liberals like Al Green and others are just out there trying to fish for things to bring up against President Trump, things that have no substance, things that have no reality. You know, to me, that's a waste of time and a waste of the taxpayers' dollars to be paying for Al Green to be in Congress when they bring up such ridiculous things as this. Would you agree?
Yes, Sir Gary, I do. And here's the big thing. It almost demeans the Constitution to try to accuse a president of something that is not serious, but they're trying to make it serious. It actually demeans the entire institution of government when that is done.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, again, this is Stand in the Gap today. We're talking with Dan Kistler, constitutional scholar. And when we come back from the break, he made a point just a second ago that only two presidents have faced impeachment and gone through the process, neither of which was convicted. However, eight U.S. presidents have faced possible impeachment. Who were they and what is all this about? Join us after the break for more information.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, friends, eight U.S. presidents have faced possible impeachment. And what I mean by that is this. They have actually had articles of impeachment drawn up against them, similar to what Representative Al Green of Texas did yesterday. And those presidents were as follows. Of course, Andrew Johnson, Bill Clinton, Grover Cleveland, Herbert Hoover, Harry Truman, Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and Richard Nixon. Now, as you well know, and Dan has stated, only two presidents actually went through the impeachment process. and that was Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton. Johnson's impeachment arose when articles were drawn up against him. He arose actually from vice president to president after the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. But articles were written against him in March of 1868 over his decision to fire or dismiss Secretary of War Edwin Stanton. And then in 1998, articles of impeachment were drawn up against Bill Clinton over allegations of perjury and obstruction of justice stemming from a lawsuit filed against him, of course, related to the Monica Lewinsky scandal, which is now, of course, very notorious. Some would say, what about Richard Nixon? Well, he faced impeachment over his involvement in the Watergate scandal and the fallout of it. But he actually, of course, resigned from office before anything could move forward. But these other presidents, including Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, had someone accuse them of things that never actually led to impeachment itself. The process never got going, but they brought the charges just like Representative Green did yesterday in the House of Representatives. So, Dan, my point in bringing all this up is this. A guy can stand on the floor and do what Al Green did on the House floor yesterday and can accuse a president of something, but that doesn't mean it's going to go anywhere, because at some point the House Judiciary Committee has to take it up and formally approve the charges. Talk about that a little bit so that our listening audience understands how that process would work, which, by the way, is never going to happen here with Al Green's accusations.
Well, that's 100% right, Dave. It's not going to happen. Let me say one other thing real quickly about the Andrew Johnson impeachment. Not just Edwin Stanton. That was not the only thing. Johnson supported Lincoln's 10% plan for allowing the South back into the Union. It was a very kind plan. Southerners ought to love Abraham Lincoln, because what it said was as soon as 10% of the registered voters who had voted in the past, you know, the 1860 election, 1864 election, the nation was divided. Only Northerners voted for Lincoln, and of course the Southern South had seceded and had Jefferson Davis as their president. So as soon as 10% of the registered voters in the South took an oath of loyalty back to the Union, 10% of the voters who had voted in the 1860 election, then the states who 10% did that were right back into the Union. And there were Northern radicals who hated Lincoln because he said, that's too kind, you're letting the South back in too easily. And of course, Lincoln was not, he was doing the right thing to try to bind up the nation's wounds, as he said in his speech. But because Johnson supported that, Northern radicals hated him, and that was part of the reason they drew up the impeachment charges too. But there was no crime committed, absolutely no crime. And that, of course, he was justified in the sense that he was not convicted and he remained on as president. But Dave, yes, the House draws up the impeachment charges, and you may remember, Dave, from the Bill Clinton impeachment that a Bob Jones University graduate, Asa Hutchinson, a congressman from South Carolina, from Arkansas, was actually one of the 14 managers who was in charge of drawing up the impeachment charges against Bill Clinton. And of course, once they do that, the trial will take place in the Senate. It takes two-thirds of the senators, of course, to convict the president, not a simple majority, or you would have the, if the president was a one party and the majority party in the Senate was, you know, a different party, well, you'd have the president being impeached every 4 years if that were the case and you had that scenario. But the Senate conducts a trial, and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, of course, sits as the judge in the Senate, not the vice president, because the vice president, it wouldn't be fair for him to be the judge, because he has something to gain. If the president's kicked out, he becomes president. So our founding fathers thought all of this through. They were brilliant in how they planned, even to carry out an impeachment, investigation and impeachment trial. They thought everything through.
You know, Dan, you just mentioned something there about the brilliancy of our founding fathers, and I was thinking of that as I was just meditating here on Article 2, Section 4 in the Constitution about impeachment. You know, the reality of it is God gave our founders some great insight, great wisdom to talk about and to touch upon things that had never yet faced the government, faced the United States of America. I mean, when you read this Constitution and see how practical it is as it relates to the governance of a nation, you've just got to say that God really worked in giving our founders great wisdom, great understanding. You cannot deny that this nation was brought together by God. But, you know, I want to talk about Richard Nixon a little bit. You know, I remember those days. In fact, I lived in Washington during those days. As a matter of fact, I pastored a church, Dan, that in that church, one of Richard Nixon's secretaries attended. She worked in the White House. She went to the White House to work every day. And I remember during that entire time that she worked late hours because she felt, and I think to the day of her death, to the day that God called her home, she felt that Richard Nixon was pretty innocent of some of these things that he was being charged for. Now, she was a secretary who had the responsibility of overseeing the gifts that were given to the president. And it was just interesting in talking with her. But people talk about Richard Nixon being a crook. And, of course, remember, I don't know if you and Dave remember when he went on the air and he says the people of the United States, or they want to know that their president is not a crook. And a lot of people thought that he was, even before he was elected. People would refer to him as Tricky Dicky. I don't know if you remember that or not.
I do. Yes, sir. I sure do.
But in light of the fact that when they started to talk about impeachment, Richard Nixon resigned. Now, he may not have been impeached. He may have been able to last that. Who knows where it would have gone. But no matter what people think of Richard Nixon, the very fact that he resigned, and then, of course, shortly thereafter, President Ford pardoned him, don't you think that that shows us that Richard Nixon had at least had a higher respect for our Constitution and for our nation than even Bill Clinton did when Bill Clinton sat by and watched those proceedings go on? And then after he was impeached, he still didn't resign. Wouldn't you say that Richard Nixon, by your observation, had a much greater respect for this nation than did Bill Clinton?
Yes, Gary, I do agree with that. And let me just say this about Nixon. You know, he did resign because I think, and I remember watching all of this too, you know, my parents, Dave can verify, they were very involved in politics, and we watched all this with them as it played out. And I do believe he resigned because I think he felt that he would have been convicted. He would have gone through the process had he not resigned. I think he would have been convicted. And, of course, resigned before that could happen. But I do believe, guys, that, yes, he had more respect for the Constitution, not taking the country, and respect for the country even, not to take the country mm-hmm. through that. But let me say this also. When he accepted Ford's pardon, and by the way, the president can pardon someone who's not been charged with a crime yet. He does have the right to do that. But the fact that Nixon accepted the pardon, I think, was an admission on Nixon's part that he was guilty, at least mm-hmm. of some of the charges, because he did accept the pardon. And it's kind of interesting. He was pardoned for something he had not even been officially charged with yet, but I think he was admitting, you know, some guilt.
And he could have pardoned himself, too, right? Can a president pardon himself if he wants?
Well, Brother Gary, that is a question. I'm just going to share with you my opinion. There are very differing opinions on this. Personally, I think he can. Now, it looks weird, but I think he honestly could, because if you look at his pardoning power, it does not say that he can't pardon himself. Now, that may sound crazy, and I know there's differing views on this, but part of his pardoning power, it does not state he can't pardon himself. So anyway, interesting discussion.
Dan, let me ask you this. Obviously, what Representative Green from Texas has done in bringing these charges, these four charges against President Trump, it's not going to go anywhere because the House Judiciary Committee is not going to take this up. There is no legal muster, constitutional muster that's being met at all. I think everybody in Congress, in one sense, is probably laughing at Representative Green. And I think Representative Green is doing nothing more than throwing mud against the wall to see what'll stick. So long term, what is this going to do if a vote occurs today or tomorrow in the House of Representatives? Because the Democrats are going to have to go on record either voting for this or against this, which most of them are going to probably vote against it. But what's it going to do to them?
Well, again, Dave and Gary, I honestly believe this. I think that if this is allowed to come to a vote again, my concern is what it does to the Constitution itself. Gary was talking about the Constitution, what a brilliant document it was. William Gladstone, who was one of the two prime ministers during the 64-year reign of Queen Victoria in England, and by the way, she's no longer the longest ruling monarch in England, English history, Queen Elizabeth II just surpassed her several months back. and surpassed the 64-year mark. But Queen Victoria, the great Queen of England in the 1800s, one of her prime ministers said that the Constitution of the United States is the greatest document to come from the pen of man next to the Bible. And that was William Gladstone. And I think tremendous harm is being done to the Constitution if this kind of vote is allowed to take place.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that may be exactly what some people are after, is a further demeaning of the Constitution of the United States. We need to pray that does not happen. But when we come back, I want to, in our solution segment, talk a little bit about the brilliance of the founders to do what they did and where that wisdom came from. We need that kind of wisdom once again. Don't miss that discussion after this very brief timeout on Stand in the Gap today.
Back in 1993, MediShare was known as the best-kept secret in healthcare. But not anymore. Today, there are hundreds of thousands of Americans who've discovered what us long-timers have known since the beginning. MediShare is affordable healthcare that really works. The great thing is, we're not an insurance company. We're a nonprofit community. Hundreds of thousands of honest, hardworking people who agree to share each other's medical bills. Every share goes to help a fellow member. And when we say affordable, we mean it's common for our members to save upwards of $500 a month. Best of all, MediShare is always open. You can join anytime. So how about now? Isn't it time you joined MediShare?
Call 844-45-BIBLE to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. MediShare, now available in Montana. Call 844-45-BIBLE. That's 844-45-BIBLE.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website. AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
The wisdom of the founders. We use that phrase a lot on Stand in the Gap Today, but it is the truth. The wisdom our founders had, for example, just in this one arena, we've been talking about the Constitution, what impeachment is. And again, I want to underscore, impeachment is not the removal of someone from office. It is not the conviction of some president or vice president of criminal activity. Impeachment is the process that leads to an ultimate trial in the Senate where a conviction could result. And if a conviction does occur, then that president, vice president is removed from office. But the wisdom of the founders to require a two-thirds majority vote of the Senate to remove a president or vice president. Now, friends, I want you to think about this. They understood something based on their knowledge of the Word of God, and Dan alluded to it earlier in the prior segment. He said if it were a simple majority vote in the Senate to remove a president or vice president, then every time we had an election, the opposing party would be attempting to impeach the sitting president for something if all that was required in the Senate as far as the vote was a simple majority. But see, our founders understood man is depraved. They understood that from the scriptures. And so understanding the depravity of man, they said we have to have a much higher requirement. So it's not a simple majority allowing the minority party to constantly bring up accusations and attempt to remove the president who is of the other party. Dan, the wisdom of the founders, their understanding of the scriptures that now today we are seeing so much of an attempt to move our country away from that. The knowledge of the scriptures, Dan, understanding man as he is a sinful creature, is what will keep the republic together. And yet we're trying to undo the influence of the scriptures in a big way. I'd love to have your thoughts about that.
Well, Dave, you could not have spoken more truth. And by the way, let me say this, you know, when we were talking a minute ago about the president pardoning himself, he cannot pardon himself if he's been impeached. Obviously, Article 2, Section 2 says that. But if he were to be charged with some crime, you know, that he committed against the government and it did not involve impeachment, yes, I think he could pardon himself for that, but not the impeachment situation. Article 2, Section 2 denies him the right to do that. But yes, Dave, the brilliance of our founding fathers is absolutely amazing. The youngest man at the Constitutional Convention was a young man by the name of Jonathan Dayton. He was 26. The oldest man at the Constitutional Convention was Ben Franklin. He was 81. If you take all 55 men that were there and add their ages up and divide by 55, the average age was 42 years old. And to draft a document, like William Blackstone said, next to the Bible, it's the greatest document to come from the pen of man. It was an amazing accomplishment. But yes, they understood the deceitfulness of the human heart. And that's why they put these, even dividing power between the three branches of government so that no one branch got too much power. They understood what happens in the human heart. As that old saying goes, you know, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So they tried to prevent any one institution in government from gaining too much power. They were absolutely brilliant, and the reason why is they had an understanding of biblical truth. And Dave, if you really think about it, and Gary both, if you think about this, Satan has done a job on our country. He has removed the foundation for our governing document, which is the scriptures. He has removed, of course, an understanding of the sinful human nature. That is why the country's where we are, even with the shooting out in Las Vegas. We're attacking the symptom, the gun, not the problem, which is the heart of man, the heart of the person who committed that crime. We want to know, what was his motive? Well, one motive is he's got a sinful human heart like every one of us do. And if we don't understand that, government cannot function properly. And that's the whole reason we need government. We need something to govern us. We cannot function properly if we don't have an understanding of how sinful man is.
That's a good point, Dan. And, you know, as we try to bring this program to a conclusion with a solution, you know, this situation with Al Green just concerns me. You know, we've often talked about the fact that we are having a constitutional crisis today.
Yes,
and the constitutional crisis that we have today, from my perspective, is not necessarily just because people are misinterpreting it, but it's because of the fact that I believe that people are trivializing it, they are diminishing its effect, and thereby they don't respect it. And I think that what Al Green is doing shows a complete lack of understanding and a lack of respect for our Constitution. And so we are in this crisis as it relates to our Constitution today. And my question to you is, how can we solve this problem? How can we reverse this trend of not having the right attitude toward the Constitution? You know, Dan, I understand that even in law school, they do not teach the Constitution. They just teach case law, and there's a big difference.
Right.
And so the fact of the matter is, how can we reverse this trend to get back to the point where we recognize our Constitution and truly allow our nation to be governed thereby?
Well, you know, Gary, I've often told my students in my classes that I bet I'd love to take a poll amongst members of Congress. How many of them have actually read the Constitution? And I tell my students, we're going through government class, they have to read it, and I tell them, you will be able to say probably what 95% of the American public cannot say. You'll be able to say when you finish this class that you've actually read the Constitution. One of the ways I think we get back to answer your question is we have to teach the Constitution the way our founding fathers intended it. Now, that sounds simple, but that is important. And the other thing, that's from the human side. We've got to teach the Constitution as the originalists who drafted it meant it to be. And then we have to, on the spiritual side, we have to, as ministers of the gospel like you and Dave are, I'm not, but as you and Dave are, and even me as an ordinary Christian, we have to absolutely proclaim biblical truth. And part of biblical truth is that man is a sinner. Man has a corrupt heart. He has a corrupt nature. We are totally depraved. And once we understand that, we understand why government is needed, and we understand why our founding fathers drafted such a document as they did. The Christian aspect is totally interwoven in our Constitution. You cannot separate the two. And to try to emphasize the Constitution without stressing biblical truth, you cannot do it. You have to do both. And I think that is the solution.
Dan, let me go here before I ask Gary to close us in prayer. I think you've touched on exactly the two things that are most critical to solve this problem in our country, and that is we've got to teach the Constitution once again. Tragically, it's probably not going to happen in most of the public education system. So that means this: if you're a parent, if you are a pastor, I think there is a time and a place for a church to study the Constitution of the United States, the governing document, and the role the Bible played in it. That is not inappropriate. And then we've got to declare from the pulpits of this country in clarion fashion the unadulterated, unmitigated Word of God. And boy, if that were to take place once again in a wholesale fashion, there's hope, great hope, for this country. And by the way, friends, I am not discouraged. I am more than encouraged at what God is doing in our country right now. Some amazing things on Capitol Hill. Gary, would you do this? Would you take us to the throne of grace and pray that once again, not only the Constitution, but more importantly, God's truth will be heard and understood and applied in our country?
Indeed, dear Lord, that's what we pray. That's what we ask for. And we pray that you would give those of us who are pastors and teachers and preachers the wisdom and the ability to teach your truth so the truth might be learned and applied by the people in the pew and in the culture. And we'll thank you for that in Jesus' name. Amen.
Well, friends, you've been listening to Dave Kistler, Gary Dole, and our special guest, Dan Kistler, on Stand in the Gap today, 23 hours from now. We'll be right back at our microphone. Hope you'll be there listening. Have a great afternoon.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap today.